Good morning and welcome to Conversations from the Heart, the official podcast of Moyo Talks and Moyo the Heart Center. My name is Mark Bind and I'm one of your hosts this morning, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome you all to this conversation. Joining me today are our other co-hosts. If you guys could please introduce yourselves.
Good morning, I'm Cindy Holmes and I'm really looking forward to opening my heart and seeing what the universe presents for us to discuss today.
Good morning, I'm Alex Morostica, and I'm very excited once again to be on another Monday morning with everybody, and looking forward to seeing what our discussion is today.
Hi everybody, my name is Valerie, and as I observe the day, and that we are now the 1st of February of 2021, I'm reminded of what a gift this space is to us and possibly to others as they listen to our discussions as we share from our heart space.
Connected to the energy of Muizenberg Peak appropriately for today. Just felt quite wonderful feeling the energy of the mountain and that energy rising up through the mountain. How did you guys find that meditation? What mountains did you connect with and how did it feel?
So I connected with initially Table Mountain, and then I went from there to Montresources in the Drakensberg. From there, and it was almost like my meditation followed a ley line up into Cairo to Giza. And then interestingly enough, I then was out the mountain, and then because the ley line goes from Giza to St. Catherine's Eye on the South Bank, actually on the North Bank of the South Bank, and connected there. So it was almost like a ley line constellation that I connected to, which was really interesting. And I would be interested to know if there's a similar constellation up above, because I felt like I was in the ley line when we were in the mountain, and then the above constellation was kind of mirroring it, and it was using the energy from above and below within my mountain. Mm. If that makes any sense. It was quite interesting for me because it just came. I mean, you can't make that stuff up.
So when you said St. Catherine's Eye.
Sorry, Catherine's Needle.
Catherine's Needle.
You know where the lion is? And in fact, it was
a gift
from the Egyptians to one of the kings in London. And the ley line in London runs right through that.
How did the energy of the ley line feel?
It was almost like it needed the energy from above to recharge, because London's ley line, ours was quite strong actually from here to Montresources, and then in Giza, it still felt strong, but the ley line between Giza and St. Catherine's Needle started waning. And it was only when the constellation of above came down that we were able to energize it.
Mm. I think that's like a process that's taking place at the moment, the cleansing of the ley lines of through centuries of heavy energy on the planet, that's sort of being cleansed through the ley lines. But yeah, I'm glad the ley line from through Africa is feeling good.
Yeah.
The mountains always seem to have like such a powerful energy. To me, it feels like there's like a vortex above the mountain that sort of like draws you up. And the energy of Muizenberg Peak was like this sort of like a powerful, almost like a masculine energy rising up, like with strength above the mountain, you know, like just sort of holding that space with positive energy. It really did feel quite nice.
When I went up, my mountain was Lion's Head. And when I went up to, you know, connect above and bring that down, I had to check because I went so far up that my mountain was just going and going. I had to remind myself that I was guiding the meditation, because it just, as you said, Mark, like this energy from my mountain just went up and up and up, and then the energy just came down, and then I thought, okay, I need to make sure it comes down. So yeah, it was a very powerful for myself, just that connection between what's below and what's above and how. And I love the idea that you suggest about clearing the old, because I could feel like there was a lot of, as I moved it through my, that energy throughout my own mountain and my being, I could feel as if it was clearing something. It felt like a clearing. So yeah, even for me, it felt quite a powerful connection above and below.
I sometimes like to do a meditation where I connect to the vortex at the top of Table Mountain and then use that to propel myself up into like the energy of the solar system and into the energy of the sun. The sun as a divine being. Yeah, fun stuff when you feel like playing around in your meditations. How about you, Alex? What sort of mountain did you connect with?
So the meditation was lovely, firstly. Thank you, Val. And my mountain is always Table Mountain. And simply because it's home. And there's a, for me, a natural connection to it. I've lived at the foot of it for most of my life. And for me, Table Mountain represents my anchor to where I come from and where I always will revolve back to. And I think it took me moving away and going traveling to realize what that mountain means to me. And it is, that's exactly what it is. It's my anchor. So yeah, I just got a reminder of it for me today. Yeah. Thank you, Val.
So did anybody feel any inspiration as to questions or topics? Anything that you came up to? Ah, Cindy.
So while we were before the meditation and then also just clearly about up above and below, I think for me, one of the things down on the earth plane is at the moment is those people we know passing over, or people we know of people passing over, and how it feels like the veil is very close. And it's not somebody who knows somebody who passed, it's people we know who are starting to pass. People are there. And I think my question is what are we, how are we reconciling that? How are we, you know, because if we think about death and we think about our journeys here and we think about some of the sayings, or you know, it's that divine timing for that person, it's the time that's right. And I was just thinking, there's this collective energy that is not so much around the individual's journey, but the collective journey and how the collective journey is do you know what I'm saying? So rather than, I would normally say when somebody dies of an illness or is taken suddenly, it's about the individual's choice in life. My belief system is that we come here to learn, we make choices, and then as a result, we leave once we're ready to go. So with this collective passing and moving through the veil, into and out of this incarnation, is this collective because it's for the species? Have we agreed individually? So it's bringing up a lot of questions, and I'm starting to have conversations with people who are losing people through the pandemic, and for me, I'm just interested to know what everyone's view is around that, or have a conversation around this collective consciousness of passing and the individual journey on that? Because I think there are lessons for the individual, but I wonder if souls agreed that they would leave at this time before coming here as part of the collective consciousness lesson. A big conversation, guys, but I'd love to explore it with you and see what your thoughts are.
I think it is quite unlikely that a soul would die at the wrong time. I think a soul passes over to the spiritual plane at the agreed time. And whilst a soul might have a few possible exit points, the higher self makes that choice when it's time to pass over.
Okay.
I don't think anybody dies by mistake. I think it's all coordinated at a higher level than we are aware of.
Mm-hmm.
But that makes it quite difficult to, that doesn't provide any comfort to anybody who's grieving.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody's grieving, they're like, you know, why is this person left? And I don't think that understanding helps people through the grieving process, certainly not in the early stages of the grieving process, maybe in the later stages of the grieving process.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I made a mistake when I was young. I had recently started, I was reading the Conversations with God trilogy, and I was just loving it. I mean, I read each of those books 3 or 4 times, and a very close friend of mine lost his father, and I gave him book 1 to read. And after a few weeks, he said, "Why did you give this to me? This is terrible. I didn't like this at all. It made me feel even worse."
Mm.
So I learned not to pass on my beliefs to other people, you know, to rather see where they're at and just, you know, hold space for them rather than telling them, no, it's not what you think, it's something else, you know.
I want to just say I'm in agreement with Mark that I don't think that I think that when our time is our time, and that is outside of anything we do here on Earth, virus or not. And one of the things that's quite interesting around this pandemic is that even though it does, certainly for myself, I agree with Cindy, I feel also like it's hit so much closer to home. In just the last week, 2 people in my circles have passed, and I know so many people who've tested positive. I'm almost getting to the point where I know more people who've tested positive than that haven't. You know, it definitely hits close. But what's interesting is if you actually look at like the overall mortality numbers, the overall mortality numbers are not actually rising. So, which tells me that if there wasn't a pandemic, we would likely have seen the same amount of passings. You know, if your time here is up, maybe you won't go with a virus, you'll go with something else. But when it's your time, it's your time. The thing though that's been interesting for me is, especially in, I think that the virus has put it more in our face. Like, I think it's made us think of, it's forced us to think about death. It certainly has for me. And it's forced me to think about what does it mean to live? And how we spend our time here. You know, it's just another one of those things that's forced you to really think about presence and purpose and impact and how do we live? And I think that's the beauty of death. Death forces you to think about living. And the other gift I think that it's given me is, you know, my dad passed 2 years ago, and my family and I have spent the last 2 years avoiding talking about my dad's passing. And in the last few weeks, we've opened up a lot more around talking about that and being open to getting healing around that. And part of it has been because of our exposure to more deaths around us. And so there's almost been a gift for me personally in allowing healing in something completely unrelated to the pandemic. But it started a conversation around how my dad would have handled being in the pandemic, which he would not have, and allowed us for healing around that, which has been a very interesting and beautiful journey. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Anne. It's quite a few interesting points that you make there. Yeah, I agree with the excess death statistics are showing very little anomaly. The day after the Biden inauguration, the World Health Organization actually issued a directive for people to change the way they use the PCR test, telling them that it shouldn't be used alone as a diagnostic, and also to change the sort of parameters at which they pick up the virus. So, you know, what that's basically saying is a lot of people have been testing positive that weren't necessarily with the real virus that's actually causing so much harm in South Africa at the moment. But I do think my opinion is that we will start to see excess deaths over the next few years, not necessarily because of this virus, but just because I think my opinion is that people are going to start to choose to leave the earth plane. And I base this opinion on reading some of the channels whom I trust. And what various channels have said is that people will come to the end of to this particular time and decide, okay, I've done, my time on earth is done. It is time for me to move on. So I do expect quite naturally people to start moving over to the spirit world. I'd be interested to hear what the others think about that.
So Mark, I think death is an interesting thing because we don't know for sure, but then we have a huge sense for ourselves. So on one hand, we're saying it's prescribed as to when we leave, and then we talk about the choice. And for me and my understanding, and for those who don't know me, spent a fair amount of time doing mediumship and platform mediumship and talking to those who have passed. And I think I learned a lot around death at that time when I was actually doing that work and service. And I also learned because people then invite you to be with their loved ones when they're passing. And that was a very interesting experience for me. And if I can just, because it's the topic we're talking about today. So often you would be invited to somebody who was dying. And if they were starting to show signs that they were leaving their body, possibly being in palliative care with cancer or something like that. And the interesting thing is, and I can talk about that point of choice. Because that point is definitely a point of choice between the individual and wherever we go. And when that vibration kind of meets is when that person passes. And I've seen people will staying alive for days to weeks to months of actually going, I'm not going to step. You know, we often hear about people waiting for somebody to turn up. And then often we hear of people being on aeroplanes and people passing. And those choices. So I do believe at that time, there is a clear choice that it's almost like, I think it's like you get to the edge and then do you jump? And then different people for different belief systems either jump or they don't. So there's definitely that choice. And I tell a story now and around, so there's that I've experienced. So for me, there's that choice. The reason why I sit here today started my spiritual journey where I knew of a person who was 33 years old and was diagnosed with liver cancer and within 9 months chose to die. That when they were diagnosed, they made a choice that they were ill. I was in London at the time, and although they operated and whatever, the death came very quickly. And for me, it was just like, wow, this person's actually choosing. Mm-hmm. And I observed that. I did not have any spiritual practices or whatever. I was living the life of a London young person, having the best time I could at the age of 33. Anyway, the minute I started my spirit, and that person died, and it was terribly sad. And it was a very interesting journey because we were young people in London, and I was very involved with that person's care. I was the adult in the whole. There was a group of friends. Mm. It was about 3 months after she died, I met somebody else exactly the same age as her who sat on Hampstead Heath and he said to me, Cindy, I made a choice to live. And he was diagnosed with exactly the same cancer. Mm. And he became a beautiful sound healer. And he said, I sat on the heath and I spoke to God and I said, I'm going to stay. And what do I need to do to stay? And within 2 to 3 weeks, there was no sign of cancer. And today he still is a beautiful healer in London. He still lives. And for me, that was a story that taught me about dying and that choice. So I bring that to the conversation, but as I say, up there, you know, because I just feel at the moment that, you know, to say that to somebody is like, well, these people are choosing to die. You're going to, you know, it's going to be difficult. So I'm asking, how do we have these conversations at the moment? What are we saying to people? What are we, you know, I have that knowledge. And I'm going to be seeing a couple of people this week who have lost people very close to them. Mm. What is the conversation? I think I'll be guided, but that's my belief system around death. And I'm just asking, how do we talk about that?
Yeah. So if I can put a counter question, do we need to say anything? I almost feel like sometimes when people are grieving, unless they specifically ask you to say something, oftentimes the last thing we want to do is say something. I think many times all people want is for us to hold space. And we have difficulty holding space. Our nature is we want to say something that's going to make it better. But I think that if we can all learn to just quietly hold space, that goes so far in helping people through grief. And sometimes I think the skill is learning not to say anything, is not to be fixated on knowing what to say.
I think you're right, Alex. It's like such an uncomfortable thing and like something I've really struggled with because, you know, on the one hand, your mind is telling you you've got to say something that's going to make them feel better, but what can you possibly say? And sort of like, you know, Cindy's story reminded me of a similar time at a similar age when I was in my 30s in London with a group of friends. My one friend's mother was diagnosed with cancer and within a month, she had died. But he spoke, the stories he told, he kind of realized that she always knew that she was going to die young. The things that she had said to the children and the way that it all planned out, she knew that she was going to die young. Her work on the earth was done. And even like when she was diagnosed, she'd say things like to appease the family, yes, I'm going to fight this, but he kind of knew that she didn't mean it and she was just ready. Mm. But as a friend, like, what do you say to this person? And how do we get more comfortable with the discomfort of holding space in this time and place?
So this is such a powerful discussion. This is a question that this last week has been, there's somebody very close to us who's in ICU with COVID. And it triggered quite a big fear for me around death, although me personally myself has experienced touching the edge of death for myself and how that felt. But and that knowing, Cindy, that you talk about is at the edge when you are able to know that it's not your time to step over, however that is, which was very powerful in my own healing journey. And so I was quite triggered this week around this person, and they're very religious. And I mean, I haven't seen him for nearly 18 months, but I was always very, very close to him, and I still am. And the doctors were saying maybe he's got 20% chance, and you know, however it goes, which then brought up the whole, which is a whole nother discussion for another time around ivermectin, which triggered me even more because the difficulty to get it into the hospital. But then I was given a poem, and I'd like to read that because it really resonates with me. And it talks about antidotes to fear of death. Sometimes as an antidote to fear of death, I eat the stars. Those nights lying on my back, I suck them from the quenching dark till they are all inside of me, pepper hot and sharp. Sometimes instead, I stir myself into a universe still young, still warm as blood, no outer space, just space. The light of all the not yet stars drifting like a bright mist, and all of us, and everything already there, but unconstrained by form. And sometimes it's enough to lie down here on earth, beside our long ancestral bones, to walk across the cobble fields of our discarded skulls, each like a treasure, like a chrysalis, thinking whatever left these husks flew off on bright wings. And that really resonated with me, that as you speak about the collective, that the knowing that possibly however they leave or however they decide in this time of death where the veil is so close, that if they step off and decide to leave, that there is something more. And I suppose that's the reassurance of when you know that the soul has a purpose and it's journeyed this lifetime. And I mean, I've only known that in my latter years about the journey of my own soul, that there is more. And, you know, I don't have words to say to those who've lost, but what I have to say to myself is that I'm connected to all, and I can feel their grief, and I can hold space. And if questions are asked, then possibly I can share something that resonates with me, but be very aware of the words that I speak when I share that.
Thanks, Val. What a beautiful poem. Hopefully you can share that with us, and we can just post the words in with the description. You know, I like to read the stories of people who've had near-death experiences. And I just find it so inspiring, because there's like a common theme of when people pass over, that they're in this beautiful, loving place where they're just held and surrounded in the energy of unconditional love. And for the most part, they want to stay there, you know, even when they're told, no, it's not your time, it's time for you to go back. They're like, really, do I have to go back? It just, you know, almost all of the descriptions from people who've had near-death experiences are of a wonderful, wonderful place on the other side, where you sort of held in love and healed and reunited with souls that you haven't seen in a while, or souls who've passed over. And, you know, perhaps it is beneficial to just know that there is somewhere beautiful where souls pass to when they die, and the body dies.
Mark, I recall that when I was felt very close to death and didn't think that I was going to make it, I recall feeling myself feeling very safe and as if, and observing, and I didn't even know what I know now, you know, like I could feel as if I was looking down. But there was part of me that didn't want to come back into this physical body because it was so wounded and defeated by excessive and extreme pain. But then there was that feeling of safe, and that it was when I came out of the surgery and I came back into my body, there was a knowing that I was going to be okay. And at that point of my life, I could not explain that. Now in later years, I understand it. And I would observe everybody else around me with these big eyes of fear. And yet I felt for the first time in many years, safe and held and a knowing, but not even knowing what that knowing was. So that's quite a powerful experience. Even if you don't know, when you get to that edge and you feel that holding and that safety, it's just a knowing, and it's not a head knowing, it's just a knowing. So I'm very glad I came back and I didn't step off then, because there was much purpose and much meaning in my life since then. And yeah, it's quite a powerful experience to actually be there.
Yeah, it's one of the common side effects, one of the common reported side effects of people who've had a near-death experience is that they no longer fear death. They just know that there's something beautiful waiting on the other side.
So I've had a near-death experience when I was young. I had a car accident where I was actually went up to the light. And again, I think it's one of the reasons I'm sitting here doing this podcast today is because I knew what the light was. So when I connect, and we talk about connecting to source, I have an understanding of that light because I've been to the light. And it is a beautiful thing, but I really wanted to come back, and it was a choice. And I came back into my body, and I'm here today. But it was a very beautiful experience of being, and it was a very light experience. And just that beautiful light, as you would read, you know, people have written or tell their story. And that light is so true. And I absolutely have no fear of death. Absolutely none whatsoever. The only thing I fear around death for myself is for those who I leave behind. And I think it's that connection around people coming back and doing that. And if I can say, you know, having had experience of family members and them not having a belief system that, you know, that we live and we die, and that's all our purpose is on this earth. For me, has always been a challenge to meet those people where they're at, and I still have to work hard with people. And I have a number of family members who believe that and don't share my belief system. And part of my belief system is that we meet people where they're at, whatever they believe. But for me, that is a huge challenge. And you know, with my mother, I remember my mother having been almost in a coma for 4 days. And her uncle, her mother and her brother drew near to take her home, and I could see them. And I said, "Mom, you know, it's time. You know, Granny's here," and we used to call her Ma, and Johnny's come to fetch you. My mother sat straight up in the bed and she said, "Cindy, don't talk nonsense. I have never heard such a load of rubbish in all my life. Having been comatose for 4 days, it was time, Mom." And there she was, not going to believe that for a second. So and we have to laugh, you know, and I see that with my mother, and I in the end, I mean, she was begging me to let her go, you know, and saying, "Please help me." But at that time I was like shocked. It was like, Okay. All right, Mom. You're going to win this. You're going to win this discussion. Anyway, and so we do. But I think what is important is that we talk about our experiences. I think it's important that we talk. I had a partner who I used to say, can we discuss the D word? Because it's the one sure thing we know in life that is going to happen to each and every one of us. And Alex, you were talking about the complexity around your father's passing in your family and in your, you know. And I think it is so important that we discuss it and we talk about it with our families and we bring the conversation up to a talking point until, you know, I do. For me, it's important. I think this conversation today is important that we're talking about these things. And we can laugh and joke. You know, I always feel the celebration of a death is always a celebration for me because there's this heightened energy and this connection that we never have with our families until somebody dies, you know, and then we bring ourselves together and we laugh and we joke. Why does someone have to die to do that? And I think it's in the death that we find the living so important, Alex. And I'd like to come back to that point that you raised because that's where we feel it. We remember, we laugh, we joke, we talk. And we talk and we connect. Why do we need death to be that for us?
Something that I think sometimes we miss also in the conversation around death is that leaving the conversation around death to happen after someone's passed is sometimes a little late. Sometimes what is could be really useful is talking about your own death ahead of your death. Talking about how you'd like to go, what it means to you. One of the beautiful things that came out of my dad's passing was one thing my dad had always told us, and he wasn't afraid to talk about his death. He'd always said that he hopes that if he gets the choice, if he could have things his way, he hopes he gets to go in his sleep surrounded by his family. And my dad was in a coma the last 3 days of his life. And also this thing about choosing when to go, he held on beyond what he was supposed to. In time for my sister to get here, but he eventually passed in his sleep with my sister and I holding his hand. And he got, and for my sister and I, it was so important to give that to him because we knew he wanted that. And we knew because he had the courage to tell us through his life that that was something that was important to him. And I think few of us have the courage to say to our loved ones, this is what death means to me, and this is what I would like if the choice is allowed. And I think it gives some kind of solace to the people you leave behind when they're in a position to grant a wish or give what you want or do things in the way you want when you go.
Thanks, Alex. I think that is some sage advice for our listeners and for us as well. And I think that is a good time for us to wrap things up. Lots for people to think about and lots for us to think about, and timely in this age where a lot of people are getting sick. So thanks to our panelists for sharing your wisdom and your knowledge and your experience, and we look forward to seeing you guys next week.